It's my pleasure to welcome you to the Clark Howard Show, which is all about you and that wallet of yours. I want you to learn ideas from me so you can keep more of what you make. That's what I'm here for. That's what this is about. But there are times you feel I didn't deliver the kind of information you're looking for, or that I was wrong in advice or information I gave. So we have on Clark.com a place for you to blow off steam called Clark Stinks, where when you feel I've missed the mark or worse, you can post it. Other people can see your post. They can comment on it. And it's beautiful because we all learn together from each other. Each week, our producer, Krista, goes through your posts on Clark Stinks and shares highlights or her favorites or whatever it is right here on the air.
I should have never encouraged you to speak.
You must think I'm pretty stupid.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
Well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe you're right, pal.
All right, we've got a plethora of Clark Stinks to discuss today. Hi, Clark. While I cannot really tell you if you have bad breath or not, I think the new teeth cleaning system you mentioned while at CES in January is a myth. You said it only took 10 seconds or less to clean your teeth. I have looked for the new teeth cleaning system online to no avail. What is the name of the manufacturer? How do we get one? Well, when will they be available in the U.S. of A?
It was one of the Indiegogo funding things, which is kind of like Kickstarter. And there are actually several things I've talked about that were supposedly miracle things for improving your dental hygiene and making sure you're brushing right and all that. I think the one you're referring to from CES this past January is called the AmaBrush, AmaBrush. And if you use whatever search engine, Google or DuckDuckGo or whatever you use, use it to find AmaBrush. Let me spell it again, AmaBrush. It's the automatic toothbrush, and we'll see if it works as it was said, explained to me this past January.
And that was the end of that was thanks for what your for your contribution to a better world, Garth.
Thank you, Garth.
Just say it, please. It drives me nuts when Clark gives advice but doesn't tell the full picture or story. Prime example. When people call in to ask whether to put money into a traditional 401k, Roth, IRA, etc., then says, unless you make lots of money. What is lots of money? What someone considers to be a lot of money may not be a lot of money to someone else and may make incorrect decisions by not having the full picture. Can you please clarify what means lots of money? Or when Clark gives advice about homes, real estate, and says, do this unless your property is worth a lot of money, what is the value or threshold amount? Clark, you leave me wondering on things all the time. And even if I personally may not make the kind of money you speak of or property that is not of that value, I would love to have the knowledge when speaking to someone that does. Nevertheless, I love what you and your team do, and I'm very grateful for all the advice I've received over the many years of listening. Thanks.
Thank you, and I apologize for the shorthanded response I give sometimes, unless you make a lot of money. So it differs by product. So with 401k, generally, till you get above an annual income, this is going to be a very small sliver of people that is above about $250,000. It makes sense under the current tax code for you to do a Roth 401k rather than a traditional. And that's especially true if you're younger. Who's really young who, other than an athlete who makes more than $250,000 a year? As you get older, at about maybe somewhere around age 50, it becomes more of a wash between doing a traditional 401k and a Roth 401k, regardless of your income, unless your income is especially at the lower end, below $50,000 a year, in which case, regardless of age, you want to do the Roth 401k instead of the traditional, if that's made available to you where you work.
Clark, you stink like skunked beer. Of course, I'm just jesting with you. Any reason, though, why I haven't heard you share or promote producer Joel's new podcast, Poor Not Poor, P-O-U-R, not P-O-O-R. It's another great personal finance podcast that follows many of your principles combined with Joel's love of breweries, would love to see some support for Joel and his podcast partner, Matt, was not written by either of them. No.
Joel, what is this, shameless promotion?
No, he really, really was not. Absolutely not.
I promise, no.
Right, so go ahead, give the pitch.
So
12 seconds.
So my best buddy Matt and I do a podcast together, and we talk about, our two favorite things, craft beer and saving money. And it's called Pour Not Poor. And wherever you listen to Clark's podcast, you can listen to our podcast. And really, more than anything, it's an excuse for Matt and I to get together and have a beer and have a conversation.
What happened, by the way, the steep, steep decline in beer consumption? That must make you cry in your beer.
Are people drinking less beer now?
Much less.
Oh.
Much less.
Well, that's terrible.
In beer consumption.
No, I'm not in favor of that at all.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
In equal airtime, Kim has a podcast, too, that's super cool.
Kim?
Not finance, but really cool.
It's called Rochambeau, and it's about crazy, weird competitions around the world. It kind of focuses on travel and bucket lists a little more.
All right. So now we're going to get into iPhone versus Android, and I had to pick some posts for this because this was definitely a hot button item. Clark, I think the stink must be coming from your upper lip when you smell apples. I listen to your podcast every day, and this is one area where I have to respectfully disagree. Some things to consider related to your recent rant. One, there are reasons why developers choose iOS first, if not only, for their apps over Android. They make a lot more money on iOS, less pirating, better marketplace. There is less fragmentation, thousands of different Android phones to support, and better support. If the 30% wasn't working worth it to them, they would skip iOS. Two, you mentioned upfront cost, but that is a small factor in iPhone ownership. It was just announced that the iPhone X has the best resale value of any smartphone at 85%. When you sell an iPhone, you will get a lot more money back, not to mention it will last longer and be supported longer than any Android phone. And three, peace of mind also factors in. You know very well the security and stability issues with Android. Very few phones, mostly the ones that cost the same as the iPhone, ever get security updates, which would end up costing a lot more if your phone is compromised. When you buy a car, do you only look at the sticker price, or do you look at reliability, resale value, etc.? How about a home?
So which of my children posted that? So the thing about the iPhone, you mentioned the iPhone 10 or X, $1,000. Most people, the sweet spot for them buying a cell phone is $250 or less. Apple sells an elite product for a sliver of the marketplace. Apple's market share around the world is about 12%, 88% Android. And obviously, Android's not perfect. The thing I had talked about specifically that the post referred to is how Apple controls 100% what goes on the phone and puts up that 30% toll gate that they charge the developers. But the marketplace says the developers feel differently than I do because they tend to write the apps first for iPhone than for Android because iPhone buyers are not price sensitive and are more likely to pay for an app where Android users won't pay for one. They just want the free version.
And another one quickly, I believe you're stinkier than a two-year-old's dirty diaper on iPhones. And they talk about how you mentioned the lawsuit. They're saying Android is insecure because Google allows any app into Android. However, Apple strictly controls what gets into their phones. Remove your Google bias and recognize that Google is a company that profits off its customers by selling data and letting apps steal your data as well. I'm almost certain that Google is somehow funding this lawsuit against Apple. At the end, it says, I've had Samsungs and they are not impressive. I usually love what you say. Just speak to text before speaking on technology. And they wrote it to Mr. Howard.
Mr. Howard. Oh, can't do that. Just plain old Clark. All right. So obviously, I have offended people with iPhone versus Android. I will tell you, they are both fantastic systems, and what these phones do and have done over the last decade is extraordinary, and they have in so many ways improved our lives. They've also, on balance, had a problem with how much we get addicted to the devices as well.
PU, shame on you, Clark, for pulling a bait and switch on your loyal listeners. After reading the show notes for last Friday's podcast, I was anxious to hear your advice on how to shop for health coverage in early retirement. What I heard instead was a suggestion that one keep working part-time to obtain employer-provider health care benefits. That's what I call semi-retirement. Sorry, Clark, but my idea of early retirement isn't working the morning shift at a Starbucks as a barista. Your faithful listener, Max Saver Jeff, in Menominee Falls, Wisconsin.
Have you never been to Menominee Falls?
I don't think I have, or I would have pronounced
been able
it
to
right.
Pronounce it. Okay.
All right. Any response to that?
Yes, yes. And this is a frustration for so many people. When you get past age 45, it gets very difficult and potentially backbreakingly expensive to buy an individual health insurance policy. So if the tease for that hour oversold what I was going to talk about, the purpose of that was to talk about strategies to make healthcare affordable and working part-time at a place that gives health benefits to all people that work there, even part-timers, is the most effective strategy I know.
A quick last one, referring to last week's Clark Stinks about taking the napkins from restaurants. You don't go through drive-thrus, but I do because I'm listening to your program on the radio or on a podcast. I only take home the extra napkins that are given to me at a drive-thru, and I don't feel guilty about it at all.
You shouldn't.
If they give me 5 napkins and I only use one, the other 4 go home. If it makes you feel any better, when we get too many at home, we just take them to church to be used for activities there. No guilt about it. Just wanted to help you unstink a little, Steve.
Steve, I appreciate that very much. Sometimes you go through a drive-thru and they forget to give you napkins at all. Other times they give you enough to take care of your napkin needs for a month. So yes, any surplus they give you, they're yours to use as you wish and keep as you wish. Appreciate all your posts. Please go to Clark.com, go to Clark Stinks, and let me know how I can serve you better.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Preston is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Preston, how are things going for you?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me on.
Certainly, Preston. How can I be of service to you with your wallet?
Okay, well, I'm 24 years old, and I've been working at my first real job, I'd say, for about a year and a half now. And I
how do you like it?
I like it a lot. Yeah, I'm glad to be making some real money finally.
And what did you do before you got this job?
Some construction here and there in between school when I could, but
so now you've got a job that you can really grow on and have stability from.
Right. Yeah. That's
great.
The hope.
Well, how can I serve you then?
So my question is, I've been putting 15% into our company 401k as soon as I became eligible.
Wait. Then, you started doing that at 22 or 23?
Or 23, yeah, so it was a year ago. Or
wow.
Give or take.
Do you know that nobody does that at 23 years old, and that's going to change your life, that you've been putting 15 cents of every dollar you make into the 401k? Do they give you a match on top of that?
Yeah, they do. It's like, I forget the breakdown. I think it's 100% at 3%, and then maybe 50% for the next 3%. So there is.
All right. So you're saving almost effectively 20% of your pay, 19.5% of your pay, every pay period. Who motivated you to do something so incredibly great for you, your life, your future?
Oh, it was my parents. they always just told me, you might as well just do it right away, and then you'll never really miss it, which that is the case because I've been doing it since I started. So
that
really bothered
great.
Me too bad.
All right. Well, I don't know what role I have to play here because it sounds like you got it so together.
Well, my question, I guess, is that there's a lot of regulations and stuff with the 401k. And I know you can't really draw that money out until you're, I think it's 59 and a half. I don't want to put that much of a chunk of money into a savings where I can't use it.
Yes, you do.
Penalty.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Because you're changing the freedom you're going to have later in your life. You know, most people don't really get around to thinking about this stuff till they turn 40. And
right.
They're like, oh, I grunt when I get off the sofa now. I'm not so young anymore. I might need to start saving. You, by doing it now, your money gets to work for you and grow and grow and grow. And the math is compelling. So I know it feels like you're restricting freedom in your life, but you're actually creating freedom in your life by doing what your parents encouraged you to do.
Okay. Well, are there any other types of savings accounts that where maybe I still take 15% of my income, but maybe I put 10 to my 401k and maybe 5 to a different type of account that I could access when I'm 40 or 50 in case I wanted to do?
So what you could do is you could reduce the contribution of this plan to 10%. Take 5% of your pay and put it in something known as a Roth IRA that you would open on your own. And yeah. The advantage of the Roth for the scenario you said is that anything your Roth would earn over the next who knows how many years has to stay in the plan till you're 59 and a half, just like with the 401k. But all the money you contributed to it, you can pull out tax and penalty free at any time, at any age.
Okay.
And I have a guide for you to how to set up a Roth IRA and where I like for you to open it and what investment choices I like for you to have in it at Clark.com on my investment guide. And once again, Preston, I can't tell you how I could not be more impressed with you than I am right now with the maturity you're showing and the amount of money you're already saving for your future. It's my pleasure to welcome you to the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you learning ways to keep more of what you make. So we have an older Honda Odyssey minivan, and it was time for it to go in for its check for so many tens of thousands of miles. And so I take it, drop it off, and I could have ridden public transit from where I dropped the vehicle off because I live where I can use that. And it's about three-quarters of a mile walk from where I turn the vehicle in to where I can get on a train. Train's $2.50, and it would have been good for me to go walk and all that. But instead, I used Uber Express Pool, which is something Uber has in more and more cities, where if you're willing to walk a couple of hundred yards to a major thoroughfare, you get in an Uber at a fraction of the normal cost. And at the other end, when you get out, you walk a couple of hundred yards from a main thoroughfare to where you're going. And it was $6.45 for me to take the Uber Express Pool. 2.5 to go on the train, and I did the Uber Express Pool. Now, there are people who are upset with me that I would waste $3.95, plus I tip, so it was really more than that. But it is a choice that many people are making who live in areas, urban or suburban, that have some level of public transit, but now there's Uber and Lyft. So the crazy thing is Uber and Lyft in a lot of places are actually increasing traffic congestion. And so there are places starting to limit how many Ubers and Lyfts there can be so that they don't increase traffic instead of potentially decreasing it. I was in another express pool when I went to get the vehicle back. And there was another guy going on the ride that came along the main drag, picked me up, and we're riding along. And he and I are talking. He was from Suffolk County, Long Island, New York. And he historically had, when he lived in New York, he rode the Long Island Railroad and all that, and that he historically had ridden a bus to the condo he lives in. But that afternoon with me and other times, he now does the Uber Express pool. And he's out of the habit of riding the bus because it goes from taking him an hour and 40 minutes to about 30 minutes. Huge time savings. And so it is a real conundrum. Listen to this in Chicago. Chicago now, you have to register with the city as an Uber or Lyft driver. There are 117,000 now in the city of Chicago. That is crazy. And so not all of them are on the road at the same time, but there are a lot of them there. And so I really realize what a transition this is to when people use shared transportation and the vehicles where you'll pay for them by use instead of owning your own, or as the time's coming in the next few years where you'll be in a completely autonomous vehicle that will take you to where you're going. But on the path to that, Uber and Lyft may actually be increasing traffic, not decreasing it. As I was an example twice in 2 days of someone who would have been on transit, but instead, because it was there, I took the ultra cheap Uber alternative. John is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, John.
Hey, Clark, how are you today?
Thanks. Great, thank you, John. I am so excited. You have a teenager who's earning a huge annual income?
Well, she's 16, and she, for about 3 years, has been making little stop-motion animation videos that she posts on her YouTube channel. And a couple years ago, they started to take off. And, yeah, she's making a lot more money than we certainly expected anybody could. And we are trying to figure out exactly what to do with it. There's a pretty good chunk of money sitting in a savings account that's been there that I know from listening to you for years needs to be invested smarter than it is. There's a second wrinkle to this question, and that is that my daughter actually has a disease called cystic fibrosis, which is, you know, a genetic disease with a potentially somewhat shortened lifespan, which is sort of difficult to talk about, but it's our reality.
Well, so, except on the positive side, I'm always told I'm Pollyanna on everything, is that her lifespan would still be a decent length into adulthood, probably, right?
For sure.
And during the decades that would be between her being 16 and then, who knows what medical or scientific advancements there would be that True. Would extend both her lifespan and improve the quality of her life.
That's very true. And we are certainly, you know, we stay very in touch with the CF community, and there are lots of pretty amazing things on the horizon. And, of course, we are, you know, hopeful. And she is, you know, very healthy and healthier, I think, than many, if not most people with CF. So that's great. But we have, it brought me the reason I have been stuck for a couple of years knowing how to invest this money. I assume, like, from listening to you, that potentially a simplified employee pension might be the type of thing to invest her money in. But my worry is, there's quite a chance that we might need to pull that money out, you know, long before retirement age. And
sure. And do you have an ABLE? Is she eligible for an ABLE account?
I'm not sure I even know what that is.
Oh, an ABLE account is where you're allowed to put $15,000 into an account that works like a Roth IRA, and it's mm-hmm. for people who have certain disabilities. And the CF people you're in touch with would be able to tell you whether or not CF qualifies for opening a tax-free ABLE account. And so each year, You could have $15,000 in that growing tax-free that is used for your daughter's medical care, and doesn't have to be specifically tied to retirement.
Gotcha. And it's that's exactly why I called you, because that's not something I've heard of at all. And I just had this feeling that we would be sticking this money away, you know, for years. And her income has grown every month, so it still looks like it's going to continue for at least a little while.
So we got a couple of ways to approach both issues. So if she's able eligible, you'd be able to put the up to $15,000 in that. And then otherwise, you mentioned the SEP. She also might look as an alternative at something known as the solo or self-employed 401k.
Okay.
And that would allow her to put aside up to $18,500 of her earnings into it. And she can go Roth or regular. See, the beauty of the Roth is that the contributions to a Roth can be withdrawn at any time, tax and penalty free. So the
it's just not taxed until after retirement.
It's never taxed.
Oh, it's never taxed.
Yeah, you do a Roth, you don't get a current upfront benefit, but the money grows tax-free, and it's spent tax-free in retirement. But there's a twist to it where only the earnings have to be left in till retirement age.
I see.
And the contributions can be withdrawn at any time. So at the point she might need medical care or for any other purpose to draw on the money, she's able to draw on the contributions portion without having to worry about any tax penalties, anything.
Gotcha. And the contribution part should be the lion's share of it for quite a while.
Well, in the short term, yeah.
Yeah. So the ABLE, we should check that first.
No, I'd say you, if she's ABLE eligible, you do both. Otherwise, you at least do the self-employed 401k.
So the ABLE, and then the second one you mentioned to do both was the 401. What was that one called?
Self-employed or solo. It's called both, 401k.
Solo 401k. See, that's, again, something I've never heard of. That's great help. That's exactly the kind of thing that will allow me to move forward, because I've been just kind of at a standstill. And my wife keeps reminding me to call you, because I talk about you all the time at our house.
Well, also on the ABLE, if you do a whatever search engine you use, Google or whatever, put in the search ABLE account, A-B-L-E account, you'll see, or ABLE account rules, you'll see whether or not, as best you can tell from it, if she meets the qualifications under what are called allowances conditions.
Okay.
And then she'd be good to go potentially.
That is excellent advice. I had the feeling you'd have some knowledge of something that I didn't know anything about.
Will you, on my behalf, congratulate your daughter on her industriousness and what
sure.
she's been able to produce at 16 in income? And that's what's so neat about the platforms available today, where an individual, even not at adulthood, is able to find something that entertains people or informs them and is able to generate an income. And that's just great stuff. Robert's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Robert.
Hey, how you doing, Clark?
Great, thank you. You want to talk 401ks.
Yeah, before I do, I just want to tell you I'm a longtime listener, and I download your podcast every day and listen to it at work, so I appreciate all that you do.
Well, you're kind. Thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome. I wanted to ask, I have been investing in a 401k through my company-sponsored 401k for several years, and I have $300,000 in that 401k now.
Congratulations to you. That's excellent.
I'm almost 50, and I wanted to find out. They just recently said that they would start offering the Roth 401k. And my question has been, you know, I put 6% in and they match it with 6. So I wanted to find out, should I take that 6% that I've been putting in the standard 401k and switch it over to the Roth 401k when it becomes available?
Very likely, yes. Very likely, yes. You're going to lose the current tax benefit that you have for putting in pre-tax money, but it's going to give you a flexibility you don't have right now that I'll explain in a second. But before I go further, are you an ultra-high income earner or a moderate income earner? Where would you say your pay kind of lands you?
Low six figures, very low six figures.
So just a little over 100 grand, somewhere in there?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I would encourage you to do the Roth 401k option. Here's why. You already have this $300,000 in, great. And the employer match going forward, even if you do the Roth 401k, the employer match is still going to be treated as pre-tax 401k. So since you're doing six and they're doing six, you would, going forward, you would be a half and half. You'd have half pre-tax and half post-tax 401k money that you'd be putting in for the years to come. And the advantage to that is in retirement, you don't know which pile of money is going to be best to take from. And if all your money is pre-tax, it can cause a lot of complications in pulling the right dollars out when you are retired. You know, where, which pile you pull from. Well, if you only have one pile, you don't have the flexibility you have if you have a pre-tax pile of money and a post-tax pile of money.
I understand. Yeah, my whole decision point was I was getting a little confused with the, basically, you know, my age being almost 50, as well as also starting over from this new at zero.
That's A-okay. It's just fine. And you won't end up with a truly balanced portfolio because you've already got all this money in pre-tax, but you'll at least build up some post-tax funds that you'll have at the point you retire. And I really like that for you. And you're lucky that your employer offers a Roth 401k. There's still like a third of employers that don't offer that yet. It's time for Ask Clark. That's where you post a question for me at Clark.com. And producer Joel asks it for you.
Clark Frank wrote in and he said, you recommend signing up for free services like Credit Karma and Credit Sesame. How do those guys make money, though? Do they sell some of our personal information?
Well, indirectly, what they do is they don't sell your information, but what they do instead is they take your information to target offers to you based on what they now know about you from your credit profile. And then if you say, oh, yeah, thanks for telling me about this particular credit card or whatever, or home equity line or whatever it is, and you click on that, they then get, what do they call that money in the internet world? They get like referral fee money or something like that. I forget what they call that. So they're not sharing your information in externally, but they're using it internally to generate profit for themselves by making money on those referral fees.
All right, Clark. And Joe wrote in, he says, I took out a car loan to help bolster my credit score. My payment is $167 per month, but I'm actually paying $450. Would it make more sense to pay $225 twice a month? Would that save me even more on interest?
It depends on the car loan itself. If it is a simple interest loan with no prepayment penalty, and they've got to disclose this to you in the loan documents, then it normally would have, as a simple interest loan, a daily interest calculation. And you making payments more regularly would lower the total cost of the loan to you, and that's a very viable thing for you to do. Be aware, though, it's always possible with a vehicle loan that it has a method of calculation of interest known as sum of digits or rule of 78s, which is a way of front-loading interest in the loan, punishing you for prepaying on that loan.
All right, and Sam wrote in and he said, what is the best annuity to buy, Clark?
Well, first of all, there's a family show, and annuity is a cuss word on this show. But if you're looking at annuities, the ones that I'm comfortable with are immediate payout annuities or life annuities, where you take a sum of money and essentially turn it into a pension plan, a monthly check for the rest of your life. insurance salespeople won't talk about those because they earn like zero commission on them. The other is a longevity annuity where you live on the money you have till usually designed to age 80 or 85, and you can be completely broke at that point because at that point, the insurance policy, the annuity will pay you a huge monthly check for as long as you might live past age 80 or 85. You're listening to The Clark Howard Show. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast of our show, I'd love it if you'd subscribe. Whatever your favorite podcast app is, we're pretty much there. And whether you love what you hear from me or hate it, take time to write a review. It's how we all learn from each other, is from those reviews.